And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. It's May 5th, 2019. And that was Phil Oakes, O-C-H-S. Great 60s folk singer, really a leader of a lot of the movements in the 60s. He was found dead in 1975, apparent drug overdose, and though he never took drugs. Another one of our brothers who was killed in the struggle for speaking out. Now, what he had to say today, the reason I played that, Links on the Chain song, it had to do with the labor movement in America, but it really applies to any of us, because to do anything in this world, we've got to be united. We've got to find those links on the chain. And my guest today, Katie Stokoe from the Algonquin Nation, and I are going to be talking about basic questions, our struggle to defend the rights and the lives of our children, without whom we don't have a future. It's of great relevance because we've been trying for many years in the struggle to mobilize people, and we find the one issue that seems to frighten people the most is the abuse of children, and especially when churches are involved in it. Now, we're going to get into that today. We're going to go into the hard evidence that we're basing a lot of our activity on, and I'm going to bring Katie on in a minute, but before that, I want to flag all this in the context of a news item that's come across our desk over the last little while, actually two separate news items. The first of all is a fairly innocuous piece that announced that the Anglican Church in Canada is holding what they call their 42nd General Synod in Vancouver, Canada. Interestingly, they're holding it at a very expensive, probably the most expensive hotel in Vancouver, the Sheraton Wall Center. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. It's on a very infamous strip, the Burrard Street Strip, which is the center of a lot of very dubious activity, including satanic ritual events. And a part of that, they're holding the synod. The people are going to be attending it. This is like a $500 a night room hotel. So this isn't your average rank-and-file Anglicans attending. These are like top Anglican church officials. And in matter of fact, Justin Welby, the convicted Archbishop of Canterbury, found guilty in our second common law court trial. Fred Hiltz, the present primate of Canada, also convicted as a complicit in covering up crimes at the Mushhole, the Anglican residential school in Brantford, Ontario. Bob Bennett, another bishop, and Mark MacDonald, all four of these guys are convicted felons. They're standing arrest warrants under common law for all four of these people. They're going to be at this event. Well, what's interesting is the very last day of this General Synod, July 16th, is the very day, it's a full moon, and at that midnight is a traditional spot, full moon in July, when the Ninth Circle, or as they call it on the west coast of Canada, the 12 Mile Club, are going to be holding a ritual killing of at least one child, usually two or more, in Vancouver. Now, we do not think this is a coincidence, and this is one of the reasons we're going to be going into detail today about the background of this. So, one final point before I bring in Kate as well. There's three areas in Canada that we have confirmed over the years as being definite sites for Ninth Circle satanic ritual killings. That's, first of all, the Marie-Rendement Cathedral in Montreal, the Brantford Mohawk Anglican Indian School, Brantford, Ontario, and the Vancouver Club and the Anglican and Catholic churches in downtown Vancouver. Now, the last two we're going to be talking about today in detail, the evidence from which we're basing all this and what you can do about it and the upcoming plans to confront these killers in Vancouver and elsewhere. So with that, I want to bring on my friend and co-host Katie Stokoe. Hi, Kate.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Good. And, it's been a while since I've been on.
It has. It's too bad. Well, we're going to have you on more.
Yeah.
You and Brenda are two of the best people I can think of doing this fight in Canada. I mean, you don't have fear. I remember your stories of standing alone outside Anglican and United churches in on the East Coast and getting abuse from those people.
Yeah. It's a heavy topic today.
It is.
Yes.
And those are the kind we like. I should remind people that a lot of the work that we do and the evidence you're going to hear today is on our website, murderbydecree.com. And all my books are listed there as well. Kate, why don't we jump right in? I kind of titled this show "The Ninth Circle in Canada and the Crime Today." And it strikes me, you know, looking at these people, what and you know, people talk about, well, maybe they're clones, maybe they're just inhuman, or they've been desensitized. But you look at these church leaders, they expect, after slaughtering generations of children through heinous crimes and murders and tortures, they expect to carry on business as usual, never go to jail, never face any repercussion, and they expect all of us to cooperate in that. And I find that sickening and outrageous, and I hope all of you listening share my outrage.
It, you know, it's interesting, Kevin, because I've been conducting my own personal research in other areas, but it's still related, which I won't get into right now. But you know, one of the things that I've uncovered is that this has been going on for millennia. It has been going on so long, like 2,000 plus years, as far as I can trace it back, and it is the same group of people. Back in biblical times, they would have been identified as the Pharisees, as the Canaanites, and it's the same bloodline that continues to carry out, especially the satanic ritual sacrifices, these crimes. Well,
yeah, and that's good background to remind people of. And we need to do a whole show sometime on that historical background.
Yeah,
and invite you to do that.
It is quite revealing.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to, you know, sometimes when you say that to people, one reaction will be, well, if it's been going on so long, it's just in our genes, what does it matter how it keeps happening? There's kind of a discouragement people can get from that. But I want to remind people that when we surface these crimes today, it's because they're going on right now, and we have an obligation. If we don't feel this outrage, we have to consider ourselves part of the crime. We've got to be dead inside not to want to do something about all this. Mm-hmm. So why don't we jump right in?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So in my personal research, there exists a common thread that is quite evident in that thread being the cult ritual activities. And now, Kevin, whether you realize it or not, you've been quite a trailblazer in uncovering and exposing these satanic ritual activity crimes. And in fact,
yep.
You're probably the first person that I ever came across that talked about this and provided evidence, and it just blew me away. It was that cognitive dissonance wants to kick in,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So you've been a trailblazer in exposing these, which is why, you know, I know and others know that you're so heavily targeted for smearing and shutting your work down. So my question for you is, when did you become aware of these cult ritual activities?
Well, you know, it started, like people know, for me in Port Alberni on the west coast of Canada in the early 90s when I started there in my ministry, St. Andrew's United Church. I mean, it's funny because before that in the 80s, I'd worked on the streets in Vancouver, on the downtown east side of Vancouver, out of First United Church as the outreach coordinator, and then when I got ordained as a minister. But working with Native people in Canada, you hear stuff all the time, very strange stuff, as you get from the margins of society. But it's actually before I got to Port Alberni, I remember an incident that had happened where I first realized there was a link between what was going on to Native people in Canada, including later in the so-called Indian residential schools and the Indian hospitals, which we got to talk about today. But not only what was going on against them, but anybody who talked about this stuff tended to disappear. I remember in 1989, just before I got ordained, I was working one night taking out what are called bad trick sheets to the women working on the street. So to
taking
identify
out what,
John,
I'm sorry?
Bad trick sheets, they're called.
Okay,
and
Well,
a trick is like a name for a John or someone who picks up a woman for sex.
Right, okay. Okay.
And we hand out these descriptions of guys who were known to have beaten up women on the street just to watch out for these guys. So we hand out these sheets to women. One of the women said, you're with the United Church. And I said, yeah. And she said, well, we know one of your guys. He comes down here all the time. We call him a circle jerk, which is their term of a guy who just kind of drives around all night, get off watching the women, right?
Gotcha.
But he said, you got to watch out for that guy. And I said, why? He said, well, he hangs out at the Vancouver Club. Don't you know about them? And this woman proceeded over an hour to tell me how the church and the Mounties and the government and business people were all working out of this Vancouver club, and they were grabbing women off the street who were disappearing. One woman was brought back, and she had these, like, scars on her body. They had ritually mm-hmm. marked her in some way. And she said, yeah, there's the United Church guys, the Catholics, the Anglicans, they're all in on it. And it's funny because it's where I first heard about it. And, of course, my reaction at the time was, well, she's got to be high on something. This is crazy. How could that be going on in this church I was raised in and worked with? So the denial kicked in, but then it all got affirmed later in Port Alberni, just 3 years later, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but that's where it began even more intensely, because the first people I began to interview in Port Alberni, the first natives who had survived the Alberni Residential School run by the United Church, he mentioned a ritual killing he saw of a child in the forest. There's a guy called Danny Gus. He said, my best friend was killed in that school. A lot of those kids are buried in the hell out back. That's why the whites don't want us in their churches.
Mm-hmm.
And it started that early. And over the years, if people look through our record of a list of offenses in murderbydecree.com, if you go to page 299, the first appendix, it says a comprehensive list of offenses committed within Indian residential schools and hospitals. Reams of descriptions of tortures that went on there. Sticking needles through tongues, ears, and penises.
Yeah.
Tightening fish twine and wire around penises of boys. Forcing victims to eat excrements, vomit, and animal remains. These are the kinds of things that people describe in satanic rituals. So clearly there was that going on early on. It's all being documented. It's right there in our
mm-hmm.
book.
Yeah, I've read quite a bit of it. Did this fella... Now, would he have used the term satanic ritual, like where he says, you know, my buddy is buried back there? Like, did he see the ritual?
He, you know, like a lot of survivors, he clammed up, he got scared. He doesn't use the word satanic, and it, you know, it. These are terms that professionals use. It's more like, you know, horrible things I don't want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people have to come by to confirm what he said. It's like a huge detective process, right,
mm-hmm.
putting together the pieces. But at the time, no, he was more scared.
Mm-hmm.
I had asked him why there weren't natives in the churches. I was there. I'd just been there a month, and I could notice that there was this racial divide in Port Alberni. None of the whites or natives ever mixed,
mm-hmm.
and I just asked him why, right?
Yeah. Well, you've documented it very well, and I mean, it obviously exists, but you know, pertaining to the cult ritual activities that were going on in the Indian residential schools, run, by the way, Catholics by the Catholic, Anglican, and United Church. Do you think that it started in one church, or, like, for example, I tend to have thought that it started in the Catholic church system, but do you think that it started there and sort of branched out to the other two churches, or did it just exist throughout all three from the beginning?
Well, chronologically, the Catholics came first, right?
Mm-hmm.
They go back almost 2,000 years. So yes, it originated with them. But don't forget the Anglicans, the Church of England, apparently split off from them at the time of Henry VIII in the 1540s. But in
mm-hmm.
fact, they didn't really split off, and they've been like a tag team, the Anglicans and the Catholics. And we're going to talk about that today in relation to the mushroom and that. But so the Anglicans and Catholics were doing this for centuries. The United Church was formed. People don't believe this, you know. Like, what is the United Church? It's the kind of national...
Yeah, when was it formed? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's good. 1925, by an act of Parliament.
Oh.
And the Canadian government created the United Church. In the United Church of Canada Act, which you can look up online, they
mm-hmm.
create this thing to supposedly to amalgamate the Methodists and Presbyterians into kind of a national Protestant church, right? But it also gave the United Church the power of a bank to lend money, to create promissory notes, to broker land. And you're saying, why are... And they also put the United Church beyond the laws of the land. They couldn't be subpoenaed to come into court. Their activities couldn't be monitored by a civil court. It's like creating this power unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, that was right at the time of the residential schools, and they were used as a big, whip against the natives.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, like all the Indian hospitals and the sterilization programs. Those tended to happen in United Church hospitals. So anyway, they've had a special inside track with the government. So it started with the Anglicans and Catholics, spread, the government and the United Church took up, you know, all of this stuff. But mm-hmm. in practice, they can't be considered as separate bodies. They're all the same beast working together, right?
Mm-hmm.
We show that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the United Church being established in 1925, do you think that that was part of this whole idea of a one world religion, that where the Vatican is to be the seat of this one world religion, which is Satanism? That's what it
yep.
is. Do you think it was part of that, like way back then?
Well,
or
yeah,
that idea.
It's funny. I've got a little anecdote about that. Anecdotes, as people call them. when I got ordained, May 1990 in Naramata, B.C., we walk up, a six fresh fish, newly ordained ministers, are handed our certificate. And it said, Kevin Annett is a member of the ordained minister of the Holy Catholic Church.
Oh.
And it had small c Catholic, but I went, wait a minute. I went over to Gordon Howe, the secretary, and I said, why are we calling ourselves a Holy Catholic Church? And he said, well, that just means universal. I said, well, we're not part of a universal church, and we're not part of the Catholic Church, I thought. And he just gave me this cold stare and kind of said, like, move on, bozo, look in his eye. But I realized later that the United Church, it's a subsidiary of the government of Canada, which is the Crown of England. And the Crown of England is part of the Catholic Church. That was formalized in 2010 between Queen Elizabeth and Pope Benedict at Holyrood Castle, where she agreed to bring the Anglican Church back into the fold, formally, the Church of Rome, which should have got her thrown out of her office for doing that. She violated her coronation oath right there.
And being part of the Crimen Solicitanus, too.
Right. Now they're part of that whole policy of you have to cover up child abuse, mm-hmm. child rape and murder in that. It's a policy. But anyway, that anecdote showed me that, that experience showed me that, yes, we're part of something we don't even realize. And when the book came down later, it was all proved in practice. Like, why would a letter I wrote about a land deal involving the corporate benefactors of the United Church cause the Canadian government to come on down on me and everybody in sight like a ton of bricks? Obviously, mm-hmm. we're stepping over something they don't want
stepping
to see.
Stepping on
right?
big toes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's not surprising when you think of it, you know.
Yeah. Talk about how these crimes compare, you know, to others reported to you later in Europe related to the Ninth Circle, because I know that, for example, in Ireland, where was it a cistern where they found a horrible number of children, you had gotten tons of emails from people all over the world. So talk about that.
Well, that was the cistern in Trum, Ireland, where they found 800 the remains of 800 newborns or young babies decapitated and chopped up, basically. And the Catholic Church and the government moved in quickly to contain the whole thing like they always do and put in their spin-up stories and everything. But there and in other places where Ninth Circle survivors have come forward, they describe things that are almost an exact description of stories told to me by Native people that went on in the Indian residential schools and the Indian hospitals, don't forget,
mm-hmm.
Which were run by the government and the churches, too, where lots of kids went missing, used experimentally, sterilized, drug tested, all that stuff. Here's four things that were common. Marking mm-hmm. of tattoos on the bodies.
Marking of tattoos?
Tattoos. So they're like, when you're part of these cults, they mark mm-hmm. them, they brand you like mm-hmm. you're their livestock.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they do it on women, grown women. They mark their clitoris. They mark them internally. They brand them externally, and they do this form of torture, but also, you know, the control of these people in their stables, if you like, the mm-hmm. children. They force kids to raise their own pets and then strangle them and then eat their remains. They do that with human beings as well, but these are litmus tests of whether it's cult ritual activity.
Dave Staffan talked about that.
Right, he did, about and that relates to the mushroom, which we're going to talk about in a bit. Mm-hmm. Group torture, for example, they get people to line up and beat other kids as they're running down the road, so running the gauntlet. And, of course, the usual drumming, chanting, seeing guys in robes, all of that documented thoroughly in the residential schools, but, of course, censored right out of the Canadian media. That's never talked about in any of the sources about Indian residential schools. So, again, close parallels, exact parallels between what we've documented recently in Ninth Circle groups in Europe and right there going back 100 years in Canada.
So you mentioned the media. Like, I know at one point in time, the media was covering you quite extensively pertaining to certain things that you were exposing and certain things that you had uncovered. Talk about that, what the media was covering, what the media wasn't covering.
Well, just kind of generally, up until July 8, 2008, when the official apology happened, I was quoted extensively. As a matter of fact, the month before the apology, the Globe and Mail ran a major piece on me, showing I was standing by the mass grave near the Alberni Residential School. I was saying what I thought was needed, you know, a war crimes investigation, criminal prosecution. They had that literally the next month. I'm swabbed out of the media. And proof of that is we went to a friend of mine, talked to this Globe and Mail reporter, Bill Curry, who had interviewed me in Vancouver. And that article on the front page of the Globe and Mail that said natives died in droves despite warnings to Ottawa, it admitted in that article that over half the children were dying, and it quoted me, right? Then in the later versions of the article, I'm removed. There's no quotes from me. Instead, there's quotes from all these church people justifying themselves. And you've never since then, in over 10 years, you've never seen my name mentioned in the corporate media, ever, in Canada, despite the dig at the mush hole, the first excavation of bones from a residential school gravesite, all of that wiped out, including my name. So definitely, a big cleansing going on.
And was there ever an official response by any of the three churches or government?
No, what they do is they don't respond. Like, for example, in 2010, we issued a list of 28 mass graves near residential schools. We gave it to the police. We gave it to the media. Nobody reported on it, never a call from the police. But the government uses that information, spins it, and makes it look like they're, like, for example, soon after that, they say, we're going to investigate possible grave sites. And then, if you remember, years later, this farce happened in Manitoba where a woman pretended to have been investigating graves in Brandon for years, never heard about her, and she said, oh, yes, children died. Oh. But again, it was spun in a very lukewarm, mild way.
Yeah, I think
and
we
so,
talked about
you know,
yeah.
We talked about that once on the air. I mean, that
on
example.
The air, yeah.
You know, so it's how they isolate, use the information, spin it, and then
spin doctoring.
You know, people don't know any better.
It's a classic blueprint response, isn't it? This spin doctoring, like for example, the farcical Truth and Reconciliation Commission is yet, you know, another.
Oh, it's ludicrous.
Prime example.
Yeah, they all people have to. I want to get on. This leads directly. You know, the best case of this is what happened in Brantford, and I want to talk about that, but just before we get into that, you know, the best way to show to people what a farce the government and church's Truth and Reconciliation Commission was, you just read their mandate. They were, under their mandate, they were not allowed to take down as evidence any reference to the killing of a child, a capital crime, or the liability of a church or a government body. Mm-hmm. So from the start, it was a whitewash in print, right? So how could you get anything out of that kind of so-called inquiry? And, we've talked a lot about how the statements of eyewitnesses were vetted, they were censored, they weren't allowed to be spoken about publicly, and yet the world pretends this is some kind of inquiry. So it's the same nonsense, right?
And you have, I just want to remind or tell listeners, too, that on the Murder by Decree website, there's a ton of video evidence, and there is one woman in particular, who attended the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and she gave her testimony on the whitewash that it was.
Yeah, Shauna Green.
Shauna Green, and people can view that.
Murderbydecree.com. Yes.
Yeah. So let's let's jump into the mush hole, because I also want to bring up an article that I found. But before I do that, let's talk about the mush hole, because a great deal of your research involves what you discovered there. Can you talk about that?
Yes, love to. And it relates to this whole Anglican Synod happening in Vancouver, because the main guy responsible for the cover-up is going to retire officially there, Fred Hilt.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, the mush hole. It's a term used by the survivors. The corporate media say they call it the mush hole because that's the food they were served. But Geronimo Henry, one of the survivors, said, no, we call it the mush hole because that was the state of the children after they put them down the hole. They became mush.
Oh, my God.
And the hole he's referring to is a cistern we had excavated, actually, behind the school. And we've got on film one of the other witnesses saying, look, they used to put kids down there when they were bad, and you'd never see them again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Brantford Anglican Indian Residential School, run by, you know, by the Anglican Church, the oldest residential school in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
This is south of Toronto, about an hour. Set up in 1832, carried through right to 1975, and I was invited there by the Mohawk elders. This is Mohawk territory, and the Grand River Mohawks invited me in writing, 10 of their elders, including Bill and Cheryl Squire, and they invited me there in the February of 2011, and they said, we've seen all your work. We want you to help us find the remains of our children and bring them home, because we know there's a big mass grave east of the school. So we went there. We had sessions. I was authorized to work there. I worked across the field in a place called the Kanata Center, which the Mohawks had occupied, and they were running it as their own community center. Now, these Mohawks were operating against the Band Council Chief, what's called the Six Nations Confederacy, who the government puppet chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And they invited me in opposition to these guys, and we got ground-penetrating radar machine. We went out there, and we found massively dislocated soil right at the spot where Geronimo Henry and others had said children were buried. We did a dig there at the end of 2011, October 2011. We brought in archaeologists and trained people to open the grounds. Within about 2 hours, we found bones and school buttons. These were not plastic, so that would have been made. They would have been older kinds of buttons from before World War II. We sent six of the bones off to the Smithsonian Institute. A guy called Dr. Don Ortner analyzed them. He said they're definitely human. One is of a small girl, under 5 years old. And Ortner volunteered to come up and help us. Of course, he died 6 weeks later of a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
So that never happened. Right about the same time the whole thing was shut down. But what we found was the first confirmation of physical remains of children who died at a residential school, and the entire Canadian media blacked it out. The only newspaper in Canada, despite all of our press releases, the only newspaper reported was the actual Mohawk community newspaper in Brantford. Everybody else shut it right out.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Talk about the Ninth Circle evidence that you found there.
Well, it's interesting because if you go to a Google search and put in the address of the school, and we can give that to people if they want to look, you'll see right at the back of the school this whole area where the cistern was, where they put the children when they wanted to kill them, put them down the hole. Right at the base of that, if you look along the ground of the basement, you'll see an archway, like it's the top of a doorway. And survivors say, yeah, there was a subterranean area under the basement where we heard drumming and chanting going all the time. We brought a woman from Nanaimo. She's an accredited, police-accredited psychic named Yvonne Fanton, and we brought her with us. It was funny because I brought to Yvonne a sample from the school, a piece of the cornerstone of cement, and I handed it to her without telling her what it was, and she dropped it. She said, I can't touch this. What is that? It's got so much paint on it. I can't even go near that thing. And so when I told her what it was, she was intrigued and wanted to come out and help. And Yvonne walked around the school and said, you know, she had gone to police on Vancouver Island and said, look, if you're looking for missing kids, go dig in that hill. And sure enough, they found them. I mean, she's that good. in terms of identifying where bodies are buried in that. Mm-hmm. And she immediately, when the day we brought her to the school, I remember, she was standing there next to it, and she shut her eyes and began to shudder and said, "That's the area down beneath the basement. That's where the red robes are. They're doing the sacrifices there." And I said, "Like, how long?" And she goes way back. They were using the school as a place to perfect torture. They were experimenting on children how to perfect these torture methods.
Yeah.
Church of England, she saw people from Rome. There was Catholics and Anglican bishops both there. She saw popes coming there. Like, she was just this ream of information about everything she saw.
Oh, my God, eh?
And sure enough, accounts of the survivors were they were agreeing with her, saying, "Yeah, we heard about all the same stuff that you're describing, and we're always warned that it would happen to us if we ever talked about it." So this kind of stuff, you know, again, kind of evidence that would definitely hold up in a court of law, but of course, for that reason, totally blacked out of any knowledge or media in Canada.
Yeah, for sure. So let's bring in, if you don't mind. Let's bring in who Fred Helt is in all of this.
Yeah, well, he's
describe what's called describe who primate Fred Helt is.
Yes, a funny term.
And what he did, primate.
Primate is the Anglican word for the top. No, he's not a.
Yeah, do you want to believe that if these guys want to believe in the Darwinian evolution that you evolved from an ape, fill your boots, you guys.
Okay, he's
unbelievable.
Anyway, Fred Helt is what's called the top Anglican, like he's the equivalent of an archbishop, or a Catholic cardinal, I guess. He runs the Anglican Church in Canada, and he intervened very quickly. I'll give you some background to this.
Yeah.
When we were working out of the Kanata Center with the Mohawks, I was approached by a woman called Leona Moses. And again, if people go to murderbydecree.com, go into the ITCCS archives, you'll see their evidence of children killed in residential schools. We have all of this written out there, so the full testimony is there. But Leona Moses was a Mohawk woman who worked for the Anglican Church, what's called the Huron Diocese out of London, Ontario. They had responsibility for the Brantford School.
Right.
And she worked in their archive section. She came to Cheryl Squire and I. Remember, we went into her home in January 2012, right after the dig had produced our results, and we began to get the news
around. In Leona's home?
Leona's home, yes.
Okay.
And she was very nervous. She kept looking out the window. She locked the door. She said, "I'm dead if I tell you any of this, but it's been weighing on my conscience for years." She said, in the archives of what's called the G12 section, that's an archive of the in Huron College of the Anglican Church records from all the residential schools, including the Mohawk school in Brantford, she said, "I found evidence there that would put the church away, that it would put the top officers away, children being killed, being trafficked out, being tortured to death, experimented on, medical experiments, military experiments." I mean, all the stuff she was naming. She said Fred Helt ordered her to destroy all the evidence. He and Bishop Bob Bennett out of London, another guy who's going to be there in July in Vancouver, ordered all the employees, they would go to jail if they ever talked about this because it would violate their confidentiality agreements. She described a researcher who went over to the London, England offices and died while over there because she came across stuff she shouldn't have. It was interesting.
God.
That happened just before I was expelled from England, interestingly enough, I think for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But Leona went on about how this Fred Helt and Bob Bennett were threatening people, were telling them they couldn't talk about this. Meanwhile, Helt is posing in the media as a great liberal bishop who wants to get at the heart of what happened in the residential schools and help the survivors. Meanwhile, he's covering up the whole thing. After Leona never went public with this stuff, but the next year, after the Mohawk dig had been shut down, her house burns down in the middle of the night, destroying some of the records she never showed with us because she was too scared. And 2 months later, she's dead.
Died.
Yes, Leona died that same year. So, you know, I believe Fred Helt had a direct role in all of that. He was sending out directives. As a matter of fact, later I was approached by a former insider in the Anglican Church office in Toronto who said that Fred Helt had received a direct communique from Justin Welby, who's also going to be there in Vancouver in July, the Archbishop of Canterbury, ordering him to remove any reference of the British royal family from those documents because the British and Dutch royal families were frequenting the mush hole, probably get kids or take part in these ceremonies. So Hales was playing that direct role. Now, in any just society, he would be in jail for obstruction of justice and complicity in murder.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because Leona, I didn't realize that she had died. She learned that the Mush Hole's founding agency was the New England Company.
Right.
Obviously based in London, England. And that the New England Company still funds the Anglican Mohawks. And I'm like, what?
Yep.
I mean, I know this is Crown territory, but I was surprised to read that. Now, the New England Company is still funding the Anglican Mohawks. Like, are they funding other?
They ran two schools in Canada. The other school, and it was called the St. George's Indian School in Lytton, British Columbia. And interestingly, because years ago when I just started this work, an insider, a former staffer at the St. George's School, came to me and described how they were flogging children to death. They had the kids in the public stocks. They used to bring kids who had run away in chains, running behind cars, and they would die en masse in the school. He was telling me all this because he knew he'd never be prosecuted for it, because the church had already made a deal with the government that there'd never be any prosecutions happening. So he was telling me all this, and sure enough, it's that other one run by the New England Company and the East India Company. That's another thing. One of our people in England found out that it was the East India Company, which was the largest bloody corporation in the British Empire. It owned the whole Indian subcontinent. And so there's big money involved in this, and that's why it carries on, right?
So when the school shut down, did that funding stop?
No, it just got diverted into other things.
I see.
And that's the point. These things carry on under different cover.
Right,
the Anglican and Catholic churches are very intricately involved in the Ninth Circle killings. And that actually brings us to the West Coast, because we've got hard evidence of that out here as well, out on the West Coast.
Now, I heard you mention correct me if I'm wrong, the G12 collection?
Yes, that's what they call it.
Say more. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
It's closed archives of the Anglican Church in the Huron Diocese office in Huron College, London, Ontario.
Oh, okay.
We had a couple of people go in there. They claim all the records were moved to Toronto. We checked in Toronto, and they said, no, all the records are with the TRC in Ottawa. TRC in Ottawa says, no, we never got the records from the churches. So they're all just making up lies as they go along, right?
Yeah.
But we believe the records are still there. We asked the natives of the Chippewa band around London, Ontario, to go in there, claim the territory, to access the records.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they all get government money. They're all too scared to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. You know, that's one of the places that this evidence is held.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can answer this, but a fellow by the name of John Wayne, I'm sorry to chuckle.
The chaplain, yes.
Is he native?
No, he isn't. He's an Anglican advisor to the Queen.
The reason why I ask is because the white man always names natives these ridiculous names and actors and stuff. I thought, oh my God. Okay, so.
But I do want to get. Yeah, let's talk about the West Coast. We've only got 15 minutes left here, so.
Okay, jump in. Do I have enough time to just bring up this article that I found on the website about the Brantford?
Let's make reference to it, but not go into great detail, because it's part of the cover-up having to do with Brantford. And I think we'll come back next week and get into that in more detail. But I do want to get in. There's a lot to talk about.
Okay, so let's talk about, because we are running out of time, let's talk about the 12 Mile Club then.
Yes.
If you don't mind. Yeah.
It's something that operates.
How the three churches are involved.
The 12 Mile Club is a name. Like, these satanic ritual networks go by different names, but they're doing the same thing. They have the same networks of insiders. And 12 Mile refers to the territorial limit.
Yeah.
We've had numerous people, reporters, judges, assistants, cops, a former Mountie called George Brown, all describe the 12-mile territorial limit is, you know, around Canada. Outside of that, it's international waters. So what these guys do is they go out on these private yachts. They take children and other people out there, mm-hmm. torture them, rape them, dump them overboard. The 12-milers, they're called. Mm-hmm. And all three churches are involved. We know that from the people involved, Catholic, and it's one of the reasons the Catholics freaked out when we started occupying Holy Rosary Cathedral, because their Archbishop Raymond Roofson and the guy who took over after him, Michael Miller, they're both mm-hmm. members of this 12-mile club. Mm-hmm. And it's situated right along Burrard Street. There's the Vancouver Club. There's the Indian Affairs Department. There's St. Andrew's Wesley United Church and Christ Church Cathedral, Anglican Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And this hotel where they're holding the 42nd General Synod of the Anglican Church on July 10th. It's all situated along this energy grid. And we know as well, over the years, having worked in the as a street minister, the labyrinth of tunnels that connect all of these things. A homeless guy once told me that he heard drumming and chanting going on under the sidewalk. And if you pull up in that area at night, the cops are instantly on you and tell you to move. I mean, it's clearly a crime-ridden area.
So Burrard Street, the strip in downtown Vancouver, its significance because of the underground tunnels and because it connects one building to the next so that they can conduct all their, satanic practices.
That's what we generally believe, and the significance of this convention is that, A, it's happening with all of these top officials. B, it's happening in this Wall Convention Center, and we did a bit of research into this Peter Wall, who owns the place. He is, guess what, an Anglican. He is a member of the Vancouver Club.
Yes.
He is the richest real estate developer in Vancouver. And he has all sorts of friends in China. Now, of course, we know from previous shows we've described about the human trafficking, child trafficking, organ trafficking network that happens over the Pacific Rim. This guy has it smells of this up to his eyebrows, and it's his hotel that they're all meeting in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, it's without a doubt, I believe that on the night of the final day of their synod, which is July 16th.
July 10th to the 16th, yeah.
Yes, the last day, Fred Hiltz is supposed to step down and be somebody else is going to be elected primate. And on that night, at midnight, I believe, as they always do in these churches, they seal the election of this person or some great event in their mind. It's sealed with the blood of a child. And we believe midnight, July 16th, we believe there's going to be a similar ritual somewhere along Broad Street, either in that network of tunnels, maybe under that very hotel. We don't know.
Yeah.
But definitely connected to that grid between Holy Rosary Cathedral, Christ Church Cathedral, the Anglican one, St. Andrew's Wesley United Church, that whole network, it's going to be somewhere in there. I just wish we had more evidence. But what we find is when we announce this, insiders tend to come forward with more information. And so we're hoping that'll happen. The more we get people out there to protest this, to disrupt this ceremony, like we've done on other occasions, to let these people going to the Anglican Convention know, we are not letting you get away with this crime. We are going to pick it. We're going to disrupt your synod, if need be, to save the lives of those children.
Bring some light to it. Well, I'll tell you that in my personal research, one thing is very evident that is happening globally is the amount of people, corporate, you name it, all over the world that are resigning. And you can see, like, I've viewed a whole list, right, and why they've resigned retired.
Right.
And most of them are resigning because of sex-related charges.
Yes. Well, I mean, again, it's all connected. And that's why we're saying to people now, like, you know, when you listen to this show, it's not just to be horrified, some voyeuristic experience for an hour and then go away.
Sure.
We are doing this to arm people, and with the knowledge of this, this latest thing happening in July is very important, because there's another thing happening at the same time. Well, just before that, May 30th to June 2nd, the United Church is holding the first Pacific region gathering of all their clergy at the Langley Events Center, and we're going to be talking about that, because that's kind of a lead-in to this thing on July 10th to 16th. But anyone...
Where is this Langley Event Center? Where is that?
That's in Langley, 200th Street in Langley, and it's going to be a big convention. Again, the same thing. It's part of this network. And so we'll talk about that on future shows. But this thing is July 10th to 16th. We want to flag. We want everybody to get there. There's an action network forming in Vancouver of some of our people and others, including the Squamish Natives who have come forward. They're finally picking up the ball now and running with this stuff. There are a group of Natives that are going to be involved. They've already written to the convention center saying, look,
nice.
This is a criminal body. You can be prosecuted for giving sanctuary and taking money from this criminal organization, convicted criminal body.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be in there and protest if you allow them to hold it there. So they're already putting the heat on them. But there's going to be protests inside and outside. There's going to be attempts to get Anglicans to disassociate, stop paying money to their to their church, the usual thing we do. And I want to urge people to write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, or itccsoffice@gmail.com. Get on board with this, volunteer, and contact those emails. We'll tell you how to get involved in this campaign in July.
Mm-hmm. Good, Kevin. Well, and that gets us into, you know, what we can do about all this, like handing out leaflets, even just putting leaflets on cars. Like if you're, you know, timid and putting yourself out there, you can go to churches and put leaflets on cars. Like all you got to do is plant the seed.
Yep.
Right?
That's right, Kate, and I think it's not even what you do, but if you just do it regularly, you wouldn't believe the impact one person can have against these churches. It's too bad more people aren't on board with this, because they don't realize when you're dealing with a very guilty party, and they all know they're guilty, it's so easy to provoke them. You know, a few of us across the country did it and forced the apology.
Mm-hmm.
We go there with even 10 or 20 people, and they are going to freak right out. And they do things when they're frightened that exposes themselves even more. It's like the mosquito and the elephant strategy.
Yeah.
You drive them crazy and make them run over a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about our numbers. It's about our truth is on our side. We have the evidence. We just have to have the courage to get out there. And that's a difficult thing for a lot of people. But we're going to set the example. We're going to be there. And, you know, I find this is hilarious. When you go, all you have to do is stand outside one of these conventions or synods, and you film the people.
Mm-hmm.
And they say so much by the guilt all over their face, right?
Sure.
And the rage with which they can confront you.
Sure.
You know, and so it's fun, you know. It's good to go to these things.
These,
you know,
nice little church.
You can have.
And the nice little churchgoers who have to, you know, behave properly, unlike this last one of the, I think it was Anglican priests who assaulted one of the protesters.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't forget, there's been a... I mentioned these guys, Justin Welby, Fred Hiltz, Bob Bennett, and Mark McDonald, who already had an arrest warrant issued against him in Toronto. He was banned from the area because of his involvement in trafficking children. He's going to be there as well.
Right.
And, you know, if you push them enough, they strike back, and like I say, they expose themselves, and it brings what happens is something they don't want,
mm-hmm.
which is a light is brought to bear on them again, and they've done everything possible to make it seem like they're good guys now and everything is resolved. Well, that's how the crimes continue. So we need everybody down there, and I'm mm-hmm. giving everyone advance notice of a few months so you can get on board with this work.
Exactly.
Murderbydecree.com, read some of the background on this. Write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, and we're going to have more news in future shows about the concrete actions that are going to be planned during that week. I mean, it's a whole week they're doing this synod. You know, so there's more going on than just a church meeting, obviously.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time, eh, don't you think, a week?
Oh, my God, especially at $400 a night, these rooms and the
walls.
That's
unusual. Usually something like that would last, you know, a weekend or, you know, 3 days kind of thing. That, like, a whole week is a very long time. It's unusual.
It is, and, you know, they say they've got Anglicans from all over the world. Well, you know, the Anglican Church is heavily invested in the arms industry like the Vatican is.
Sure.
Landmines, you know, multinational corporations. It's a big business gathering as well.
Sure.
And It's also to coordinate the child trafficking at these conventions. We know that goes on all the time, and they're situated right on that Burrard Strip where all of these things are energetically, as well as in the flesh, are going on. So,
yeah.
You know, that's why we really urge people to get on board, because this is going to be an Achilles heel for them.
Yeah.
You know, Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, you strike what your opponent loves, and your numbers are greater than you think, because they have to respond. And this is what can happen during that week. So it's really important everyone get out there.
And I want to also put out, like, to remind the listeners that you can get Kevin's books at murderbydecree.com, and you can, you know, leading up to this action that's coming up this summer, you can familiarize yourself with the various books that he has, Murder by Decree, The Whistleblower Manual. They're all fantastic books as well.
Thanks, Kate.
Yeah.
And also, you know, in the weeks ahead, we're going to go into more details about this. So people are armed with the knowledge, because that's really important to have. Also want to remind people, just in closing, we only have a minute left, but I want to thank you, Kate, for being on. It's always great. We're going to have
my
you
pleasure.
On again. And also, these are going to be, they're going to be Catholic officials at this Anglican. They're going to be observers from the Catholic Church. We know the Catholics and Anglicans are really twins of the same evil. And so when we strike on July against the Anglican Church, we're also hitting the Vatican. And they're at a very tenuous time right now, because Bergoglio has already stepped down as Pope, so-called Pope. So this is important on that front as well, on the whole campaign against the Vatican. So thanks to all of you for tuning in today and listening, learning more. It takes courage to act on this, not just to learn, but to act. And again, write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, to get involved. We already are bringing people from other areas on the continent, and also some ITCCS observers from Europe and media that are going to be covering this action in July in Vancouver.
Nice.
So get on board now. You can save lives, literally, of children by doing this. And any final words, Kate? You got a minute.
No, I'm fine, Kevin. You go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. And we will be back next week. Until then, follow our work again, murderbydecree.com. Share this once it's up online at www.bbsradio.com/whowestand. We archive the programs within a day. Share this program with your friends, especially if they happen to be Anglican, Catholic, United Churchgoers. And until next week, stay strong, stay clear, carry it on. Thank you.